Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shartok. With us this week is our wonderful friend Blair Horner, the Executive Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. He's back, and we love it every time he's here because he knows more about state politics than anybody I know. Welcome, Blair.
Thanks for having me, Alan. Good talking to you.
As always, it is great talking to you. Let's talk a little bit about climate change. With excessive heat, more severe storms, record flooding, algae blooms, and more, we increasingly see the impact of a warming planet. Are we doing enough, is the question. Are we doing enough in New York to deal with this issue?
I mean, the short answer is no, because the amount of work that has to be done is so significant. And, AMC listeners who will pay attention to public policy know the Senate has acted to, U.S. Senate has acted to deal with climate issues through the Reduction Act. And that's going to be hundreds of billions of dollars focused on, you know, new tax credits and stuff to move people from fossil fuel powered homes and vehicles to electric. And, you know, that's going to be sort of the shift. New York State is doing the same thing. New York has aggressive goals. But, you know, we really have to amp it up. There has to be a lot that has to happen because we've seen it all across the world. The world's on fire. The planet's heating up. That's not going to change. We have to act now to, limit the catastrophic damages that are going to occur over the rest of the century. It's an existential threat. It doesn't get much more dangerous than what we're experiencing, and action has to happen. The nation, the world has waited too long, largely due to the oil companies, you know, sort of blocking environmental reforms for the last 40 years. But because of that, we're in a terrible situation, and we're just trying to keep it from getting catastrophic.
So is New York different from other states? Is New York different from the nation? Is there something that's going on here, Blair Horner, that really sets us apart?
Well, I mean, in terms of environmental policy, Washington has been stuck in gridlock for so long. The country really had to rely on the big states to move the environmental agenda forward. So California and New York, if they act in concert, can make a big difference. And so the reliance on non-fossil fuel powered cars, for example, is the so-called California standard, in which New York has adopted, allows states to sort of take the lead. And if California and New York are not taking the lead, then the country doesn't really go anywhere. So New York has very aggressive goals on climate change, is trying to focus its energies on, relying on more alternative energy sources. But the price tag is staggering. It's going to be billions and billions of dollars annually that the state is going to have to spend to make roads more adaptive to bigger storms, to deal with rising sea levels, which are going to impact New York City and downstate. The cost is going to be staggering, and that part hasn't been figured out. And that could be figured out, but it hasn't been figured out yet by the state. So New York has to lead.
Do we have the leadership here, and we have a coming gubernatorial election, of course, do we have the present leadership that will carry us through?
Yeah, I mean, it takes many to tango in Albany, like it takes three. The governor, Governor Hochul, her predecessor, Governor Cuomo, and their predecessors have all sort of discussed the need for acting on climate change. It's not like the state's run by a bunch of climate deniers. And legislation was passed a few years ago that set very aggressive goals. But it's easy to say goals for the year 2030 and the year 2040 and the year 2050 when you've been elected in 2016, right? I mean, so right now the goals are there, but the steps are not all in place to achieve those goals. And that can always turn back. You know, you could, if people who don't believe in climate science get elected to run the state, a lot of those steps could be reversed.
As you see the coming gubernatorial election, Blair Horner, coming up, have people taken positions?
Yeah, I mean, again, you're right that, you know, the election can make all the difference. I mean, Governor Hochul's positions, I think, are pretty clear, and she's not pretending that something's not happening. Representative Zeldin has been sort of all over the place on some of these issues, but he's from Long Island, and so I'm sure that he is environmentally sensitive to the rising sea level issues because that affects his current constituents. So I don't, again, to get elected, for a Republican to get elected in New York, you have to sort of build a coalition that includes a lot of independents and even some Democrats to get the votes. And so he would have to adopt that positions that would probably be more like Governor Pataki's positions were years ago. And so I don't think that a Governor Zeldin administration would reverse environmental policy, but they may take their foot off the gas. And we really have no choice but to move as aggressively as possible and to figure out ways how to pay for it. I mean, that's really, to me, the big issue that hasn't been resolved is how does the state of New York pay for its ambitious climate goals? Someone has to pay. We think the oil companies should pay because it's their problem. They're the ones who set this whole situation up. But in terms of state policy, that issue hasn't been resolved.
But you don't really think that the oil companies will come forward and say, it's really our responsibility, we're going to have to handle this, do you?
No, they're not. I mean, they've been terrible. They're like, their actions have been on sort of a scale that are unprecedented in human history. They've known for 40, 50 years about the problem and have done everything humanly possible to stop progress to deal with the problem. And as a result, millions of people will die. And so their behavior is so irresponsible. It's really will go down in history, assuming we have a history, as the worst example of corporate irresponsibility in human history. And so we think they should pay for it. We think Governor Hochul in the legislature or Governor Zeldin in the legislature next year should put them on the hook to make them pay for it in a way that they can't transfer the cost onto consumers. It should come out of the shareholders' pockets. They're making enormous profits this year, unprecedented, certainly in a decade, in terms of the profits that they're making. They have the money to pay for it. We're paying for it at the pump. We should get some of those profits diverted into environmental programs to help offset the cost of dealing with climate change.
Let me ask you this. In the governor's race, Kathy Hochul seems poised to become the state's first woman elected governor of New York. However, she's currently fighting her challenges, Republican Lee Zeldin, who is, and you can correct me on this if I'm doing him wrong, but I've always thought of him as a Trumper, and she's fighting him over bail reform after Zeldin was attacked at a campaign event, and he's being joined by Democrats, including Albany County District Attorney David Soares, who says more needs to be done to stop the carnage in the streets. Could this make a difference in the governor's race?
Well, the enrollment advantage for Democrats in New York is really significant, and it's gotten bigger over time. I mean, the last Republican elected to statewide office was George Pataki in 2002, 20 years ago. So Zeldin has an incredibly difficult challenge ahead of him. And you're right that he has positioned himself within the party to be sort of the part of the MAGA wing of the Republican Party, the dominant wing of the Republican Party. And that's not popular in New York. So that's going to hurt him. And yet, you know, some of the polling that's come out shows him with a lead in rural areas, which you'd expect. They tend to be very Republican. But with an edge in the suburbs, which are really the battleground for the state. And so right now, the governor's polling advantage really stems from the urban areas in New York, primarily New York City. And she doesn't really have a base of support in the city. So the more the debate is on public safety, the more it helps Zeldin. Because suburbanites are concerned, like everybody is, concerned about crime. You know, so that dynamic is a problem for Governor Hochul. On the other hand, she does have a lot of things she can push back against Representative Zeldin in terms of his positions on, for example, the January 6th riot and coup attempt by former President Trump. She can hang that around his neck, and that's a cinder block that he's going to have to carry.
Let's talk a little about redistricting. I'm fascinated by this. I grew up on the Upper West Side on 96th Street. Now we have a major primary coming up between two top Democrats, Carolyn Maloney, who I know quite well, In fact, who used to work for me when I worked for Orenstein, and of course, Gerald Nadler, who has a huge base of support. So who wins in that one?
You know, the August primaries are, I assume, incredibly hard to predict what's going to happen. We haven't had any before. And, you know, people are thinking more about...
They're on Fire Island.
Sure. Yeah, they're out, you know, they're out having picnics, drinking beer. They're not thinking about primaries. So I think that the August primaries are going to really turn on organization and ability to pull the vote. And because in that district, Nadler versus Maloney, you have two political heavyweights, I think it's really hard to predict. Now, the polling, as of our conversation, gives Nadler an edge. It seems to be shifting in his direction. But I don't think the polls necessarily are very helpful here because it's really going to turn out on turnout. And early voting starts on August 13th. And so there'll be people that, you know, and then there's absentee ballots. People can request them by August 11th. And so there's a whole bunch of things that can happen that people, I think, can't really predict. It's going to come down to who has the political club strength, the organizational strength in terms of a campaign to pull their vote. The endorsements could make a big difference, too. There's two very competitive congressional races in New York City, the Nadler v. Maloney race, and then the open seat, where there's, you know, more almost as many candidates as I have fingers and toes to sort of count on in terms of the Democratic primary. So you have two very big congressional races. Now, then neither one of them are going to tip the balance in the House of Representatives. Both seats are safely Democrats. But the primaries in other parts, I mean, the elections in other parts of the state could make a big difference. So we'll see what happens. But I don't think I could predict, because I don't know enough about the political strength and organizational strength of Nadler's political machine versus Maloney's.
Well, Nadler has always been the bigger man. Oh, I'm sorry that I said that. Okay, let's talk a little bit.
The only man of the two.
But the bigger is what I'm apologizing for. Okay,
I know.
So let's talk a little bit about Kathy Hochul. How come she's the first potential woman governor of New York?
Well, you know, you can ask Andrew Cuomo about that. I mean, Cuomo, the former governor, brought her out of political oblivion to be lieutenant governor because he wanted a woman on the ticket. And she lost her race for Congress, her reelection bid for Congress, and it was a tough seat. And she was working, I think, as like a lobbyist, government affairs for M&T Bank, and he plucked her out of political obscurity to be his running mate. And again, at the time, he was facing a primary opponent from a woman. And so it was, you know, sort of a tactical move on the governor's part. She's from upstate. She, you know, had been elected to countywide office in Erie County, had been a member of Congress, so had some political chops. I don't think anyone sort of could have predicted that this was the way it was going to play out. Mm. But she, you know, she gets moved, you know, thanks to Governor Cuomo, she moves from nowhere politically to, you know, to being the queen of the Hill. And, you know, she's been super aggressive about fundraising, so much so that, you know, she has a huge war chest that dwarfs anything. In politics, if you have a huge war chest, that can really scare off opponents, and it can also scare off donors to opponents because people start to view that she's a shoo-in. She's definitely the odds-on favorite come November.
I would think so. Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming primaries. So what do you have your eye on that could make a huge difference?
Well, in the primaries, I mean, we talked a little bit about the Maloney v. Nadler race. I mean, that's sort of a fascinating thing. I mean, because of the New York State Court of Appeals led by Chief Judge DeFiore, you know, they overturned the congressional lines and, you know, had somebody from Pennsylvania sort of come up with lines that, you know, when you look at them, they sort of make sense. But as a result, you have this huge fight. And so that's a fascinating thing. But in terms of the primaries, I mean, it's not to me that those kinds of issues are sort of interesting. And on the Republican side, the Langworthy versus Palladino race is sort of fascinating out in Western New York, because, you know, to think about, you know, Carl Palladino being in the Congress is sort of mind-boggling at a certain level. And those are two primary races that I think are, to me, are the most fascinating. But for NYPERG's perspective, I think what really is looking at is the general election, because the Cook Political Report has more toss-up districts in New York State, congressional districts in New York State, races in New York State, than any other state in the country. And if it's a small margin that determines who the majority is in the House, what happens in the general election could have the biggest impact on national policy. And New York could be at the forefront of that. I mean, the New York politics, particularly because of redistricting, are really fascinating going into more so in November than in August.
Let's talk a little bit about ethics reform. Everybody says New York needs ethics reform. Why?
Well, I mean, New York State has had a long history of corruption. Right. And in large measure, the waste of taxpayer dollars as a result of some corruption case is a failure of its ethics oversight. I mean, it's pretty clear. If people think they could get caught, they behave differently than if they think that they won't. And in New York, obviously, people in recent years didn't think they were going to get caught. And so we've had this long, unfortunately long and unbroken chain of people getting into trouble, including the former lieutenant governor under Governor Hochul. So it's about we live in a democracy, and democracy works with the public support. And the public support of democracy hinges on the fact that they believe they're getting a good government for their money. And the more people become cynical, the less likely it is they'll participate. And the less likely they participate, the more power interest groups have. And that's a democracy death spiral. So if we're going to spend all the money on ethics oversight, we ought to get real ethics oversight.
We're talking to Blair Horner, the smartest guy about New York State politics that I know. So, Blair Horner, what about the general issue of transparency? Hochul has said she wants to have an open, transparent administration. Yet she told me that the nature of budget negotiations requires that they be done behind closed doors. Her budget also stripped out some of Comptroller DiNapoli's pre-audit powers, which has been infuriating for me because she's not the first to do it, but she should have known better. Where are you?
Well, I think, you know, every governor, when they first come into office, want to be a reformer, right? Because they don't have to defend the status quo, and they obviously are not the status quo. I mean, Hochul's case is a little bit different because she inherits the administration, the Cuomo administration, but she doesn't have to defend it. And the governor has taken some steps in terms of ordering the agencies to sort of comply more quickly with freedom of information law requests than her predecessor did, which was her predecessor, you know, had sort of created a system that made it very difficult for the public to know what was going on. But I think over time, you know, the Hochul administration has adopted many of the sort of worst policies, practices, not policies, mm-hmm. That existed in New York for decades. So, for example, in the budget, the governor hammered out a Buffalo Bills new stadium deal as part of the budget that, you know, had not really been sort of vetted and has now turned out to be the most expensive public NFL stadium in the country. And then at the end of session, they jammed through a $10 billion deal for basically computer chips manufacturing. $10 billion. And there'd been no sort of discussion on that in advance. And so, again, it leads back into the sort of the ethics thing, that if everything is a closed-door deal, you breed public cynicism. And it's the public's money. It's not like somehow it's like Governor Hochul's money or the legislative leader's money. And so I think, you know, yes, it's harder to do negotiations in public than it is in secret, and no one's arguing that everything that's done in the budget should be done in public. But there should be an opportunity for the public to react. And when you're jamming things through at the last minute in the darkness of the middle of the night, it's not fair to the public to know what the heck their own government's doing. And it just makes things, again, the long-term prognosis is you end up turning people off to their own government, and that's terrible.
Let's go, Blair Horner, to public health, which is, of course, part of your group's public health central issue of NYPERG. Are people losing faith in the public health care system after COVID-19, now monkeypox and even polio? People seem more resistant than ever to listen to health care professionals about getting vaccinated, wearing masks, and listening to other advice. Are we in big trouble?
Well, I mean, your original point about NYPERG having a big head and wearing many hats, of course, is true. And we are interested in public health issues because it's so critically important. I mean, I think New York has to look at its system of healthcare regulation in general. I mean, New York State is, if you look at the data, doesn't provide, on average, the best healthcare in the country, hospital healthcare in the country. This public health system has been starved for resources for years, and particularly during the Cuomo years, but it's his predecessors too. There's been sort of a systematic dismantling of the health department, certainly going back to the Mario Cuomo days when David Axelrod was the health commissioner, and New York's health department was considered sort of the vanguard of the country. Mm-hmm. You know, when you cut back on resources, and you make basically the agency subservient to the wishes of the governor, you don't attract the best people. You make it harder for those people to deliver the goods. And I think the legislature and the governor should really look at what the health department's doing and put it back in the vanguard category, because what happens in New York City can often affect the public health of the country. And we saw that with COVID, and we're seeing it now with monkeypox. And God knows what else is going to happen. I mean, as the world becomes interconnected, the ability of these weird sort of diseases that exist in different parts of the country can end up in New York because it's a global city.
Yep.
And the state has to do more.
Let's talk a little bit about your reaction to the Supreme Court decision on abortion. How is that playing in New York? Because, of course, New York is open to people getting abortions, women getting abortions. Other states aren't. And therefore, there has always been the feeling that somehow people would come from other states to New York. How important is that?
Yeah, I mean, your listeners know, I mean, NYPERG is not for or against the reproductive issues. We just don't have a policy on it. I mean, you're right. I mean, New York goes way back, 50 years, to having a legal right to an abortion. That was first approved in, you know, under Republican administrations in the early 1970s. So it's been a longstanding position. New York has been sort of a leader in that area for many years. And I think it's spawned activism in New York because the key plank now of the Democratic Party is to give women the greatest possible choice when it comes to reproductive health. And there'll be a constitutional amendment on this, actually. They did first passage this year that strengthens in the state constitution right to an abortion, as well as other equal rights for women and other groups in New York State. And so I think it's going to be an important issue. And I think it plays to the sort of changing politics of New York State, where, you know, in years past, the Catholic Church had a much stronger legislative presence than it does nowadays. And that was, I think, a key component as to why there had been less action at the state level. But in New York, I think the growing advantage of Democrats in terms of enrollment and the fact that it's a plank of their party, I think, strengthens the protections in New York and will likely continue to do so, assuming the Equal Rights Amendment proposal passes second passage next year and then goes to the voters after that. And I think you're going to see some things in New York that will allow people from out of state to come to New York if they need, women need, access mm-hmm. to an abortion.
Blair Horner, your group, of course, has been very prominent in higher education. It did very well in this year's budget, right? And why?
Well, I mean, the state was awash in cash, so that always helps. And higher education is usually the first on the chopping block when state budgets are tight, and last in line to get money when there's largesse. So this year it got money, but it didn't really get enough money to restore what has been happening, particularly in the state universities. If you look at the state university system over the term of the Cuomo administration, the 10 years there, I mean, there's been this incredible erosion in enrollment at the four-year public colleges and the community colleges, staggering at some of the community colleges. And the state did not really restore the revenues. I mean, you know, the physical plan of a college, you still have buildings, you still have staff, you still have parking lots. And if you lose some of these cases, like half of the student enrollment, that's a big hit to the finances of that community college. And if the state doesn't restore, the locality doesn't restore the money, they're in a position where they have to keep cutting back services. And so this year's budget was good with regard to getting rid of some of the most recent bad policies that were put in place, the financial policies that were put in place by the state, but it did not do enough to reverse the downward decline. And again, that comes down to money. And I think the state is really going to have to look at it, because higher education not only is a place where young people can learn a career and they learn about their role in civic society, it's also an economic stimulus. And, you know, the state spent a lot of money on the Buffalo Billion, for example, didn't get a lot out of it. And yet if they pumped that money into higher education, they could keep, particularly a lot of the places in upstate New York, that's really the economic engine that these regions rely on. And I don't think the state really looks at it that way enough. And they really should be doing more investments in higher education, both public and private, to help stimulate the economy and also to churn out skilled, you know, citizens of the country, as well as individuals who understand their role in democracy.
Blair Horner, of course, you've mentioned the Cuomo name a couple of times in this interview. Is Andrew Cuomo done, finished, kaput?
Well, you know, he's got $18 million to restore his image, which he's using, his campaign account, which he's allowed to keep, which is ridiculous, in my opinion. I mean, if you're not running for office, you should have to give the money back. But he gets to keep it under sort of the tortured New York state law. So you never count people out. You know, you never know. We'll have to see when the dust completely settles from all the various legal wranglings he's involved in. I think from an ethics point of view, I thought the book deal was the worst instance of the of failure of the state's oversight of ethics. And, you know, we now know from a report that came out from the Joint Commission, now defunct Joint Commission on Public Ethics, that the Cuomo administration really steamrolled the state's ethics body to agree to the $5 million book deal. So I think the book deal is still out there festering away. I think he's got $18 million to restore his image. You never know how the world, things are going to play out. So I wouldn't count him out. I mean, he's a very, very, very skilled political operative. And he is, you know, he knows how to command the stage. So I wouldn't necessarily count him out. No, I mean, I think he's obviously, the sexual harassment issues are going to plague him forever. But, you know, how they all play out, I think, is anyone's guess. And maybe time heals all wounds.
We're out of time. Our guest has been Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, NYPIRG. Blair, we think you are the best. And we thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Alan.